Support for AHLA comes from Stout, a global investment bank and advisory firm specializing in corporate finance, transaction advisory, valuation, financial disputes, claims, and investigations. They serve a range of clients, from public corporations to privately held companies in numerous industries. For more information, visit stout.com.
My name is Jackie Papish. I'm a partner here in the Washington, D.C. office of Barnes & Thornburg. I defend healthcare companies, small-time providers, practice groups, all the way to Fortune 50, pharma companies, hospitals, health systems, health insurance companies, and the like, in government investigations and litigation involving healthcare fraud and abuse issues, most frequently surrounding the False Claims Act, anti-kickback statute, and the like. And in fact, I've had the pleasure of working with my my friend here, Peter Dressel, who I'll let you go ahead and introduce yourself, Peter.
Thanks, Jackie. Yeah, my name's Peter Dressel. I am a senior managing director with FTI Consulting. I'm based in Washington, D.C., and I've been consulting in the healthcare industry my entire career, working with healthcare organizations and primarily providers, but also payers, addressing a range of billing, coding, and compliance issues, ranging from providing expert witness testimony and litigation, serving as organizations IRO for those that are under corporate integrity agreements, as well as assisting a number of organizations address different types of inquiries from DOJ, OIG, and other governmental contractors.
Well, let's go ahead and dig into it. I think, the title of our presentation is Medicare Outliers, not exactly Malcolm Gladwell's idea of success. For those of our listeners who have not actually read the book, just briefly wanted to kind of touch on it and help folks kind of understand why we decided to go with that title. Malcolm Gladwell's book is called Outliers, The Story of Success. And it's about how these remarkable individuals are among us and they reach these extraordinary heights of success in our culture and are truly outliers. Malcolm Gladwell defines outliers as something that is situated away from or classed differently from a main or related body, or a statistical observation that is markedly different in value from the others of the sample. And I can tell you, I think both Peter and I would agree that that's exactly what we're talking about here today in terms of the definition of outliers. They are just that. But in terms of the success of the outliers in the healthcare expenditure side of things, I'm not quite sure that we could go so far to say how successful those have been. And I think we have a variety of things to talk about today about why they sort of can contribute to factors relating to fraud, waste, and abuse issues in the healthcare industry.
Yeah, Jackie, I'd add to that. Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think outliers, especially as Gladwell wrote, at least a standard deviation or two away from the mean, and certainly more rare than not. And I think for the vast majority of Medicare claims, that when an admission, especially on the hospital side, is exceptionally costly, and then Medicare outlier payments do their job and compensate providers for providing that costly care. As we'll get into the details, the devil truly is in the details as we get into those, in terms of how Medicare, originally designed outlier payments and how that's evolved over time, where, providers can knowingly or unknowingly get themselves into issues with respect to either False Claims Act issues, DOJ issues, or just general billing, coding, and compliance concerns related to outlier payments.
So I think it'd be useful to kind of set the stage for folks here in terms of what outliers are, maybe for some who aren't as familiar with them as we are, so intimately familiar with them, I guess, fortunately or unfortunately, Peter. I actually took a look at, in preparing for this podcast, a couple of different articles, because I just wanted to make sure that I could fully articulate exactly what an outlier is, because in the, healthcare expenditure side, they are really complicated. And, the formula that underlies them is pretty complicated. Once you get it, I think, it starts to crystallize. But One of the articles I took a look at was the American Journal of Managed Care had published an article back in 2021. And if anybody's listening and you want to know what article this was, feel free to reach out. But it essentially talks about what are outliers? Why do we have them in the healthcare industry in the United States? They said something like and this is a little bit older because the article was a couple of years old, but in 2016 there were 5.7 million hospital stays in the US with a rate of 104.2 stays per 1,000 population, and that the estimated total cost for those stays was more than $417 billion, which amounted to a mean cost per stay of $11,700. The article gets into sort of what the outliers, what outliers kind of occurred within that universe, and essentially concludes that, there are folks who stay beyond the length of time that's typically expected, and contribute to really, high costs in both hospitals and health systems, while the risk associated with those hospital stays, sort of stays the same. And so, Medicare and other federal healthcare programs have tried to figure out how to compensate hospitals and health systems and providers for those extended stays. And I'll let Peter really get into the nitty-gritty and get under the hood. But, at the end of the day, it can be a real problem, of course, for hospitals to have to deal with outliers and try to cover those costs. But it can also create kind of an issue and a compounding effect in terms of issues related to fraud, waste, and abuse.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, you walk through those numbers. I mean, the amounts get high pretty quickly. Medicare and other payers created outliers really on the basis of paying for particularly in the inpatient setting, paying for admissions on a DRG basis. So you've got that base payment associated with the admission based on the patient's diagnosis code. Primary diagnosis, primary condition, and the outlier payment compensates those providers in instances where the costs associated with treating that patient, whether it be from a exceptionally long length of stay or a abnormally high utilization of resources required to treat the patient's condition. The thought behind the Medicare outlier payment was to provide compensation to the provider to account for those situations. And so that concept of the DRG payment is baked into how Medicare calculates an outlier payment on any given claim. So when those of you out there who are providers submit your claims to the contractor processes the claim based on the DRG and all of the associated geographic factors associated with your hospital. And then in for every claim, they calculate whether that claim exceeds what's referred to as an outlier threshold based on a calculation of, or an estimation really, of the costs associated with providing the care for that admission. And the way Medicare and its contractors estimate those costs is by applying the cost, the hospital specific cost to charge ratio to the hospital to that to the charges associated with that claim. And that yields an estimate of the costs. And if those costs exceed the threshold associated with that claim, and that threshold equals the DRG payment plus based on as well as a fixed loss threshold. If those estimated costs exceed that threshold, Medicare issues an outlier payment. And so it's certainly easier with demonstratives and there's we could put it on a whiteboard, but essentially those are the broad strokes of how the contractors calculate the outlier payment. And kind of as we continue to go through this, a couple of key things to zero in on there are, the contractor's use of the cost to charge ratio. That cost to charge ratio is sourced to the hospital's most recently submitted cost report. And so naturally there's a lag there in terms of, cost reports are submitted 5, 6, 7 months after the end of a hospital's fiscal year. then takes the contractor a little bit of time to process those cost reports. And so, very quickly, the cost to charge ratio is, somewhat out of date if the hospital's implementing, normal cost to normal charge increases at the hospital. And so that concept of, what charges are set to and how they change over time, and then, how long it takes for those changes to get reflected through the cost reporting process can have significant impacts on the outlier payments. And I think as we continue to talk through this, some of the examples we'll walk through are illustrative of that in, just scenarios in which those lags and, adjustments to charges for reasons, maybe specific to outlier payments, maybe, completely unrelated, have triggered government and other regulatory focus on outlier payments.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, Peter, to help folks understand in terms of like what are these key levers that sort of would trigger the types of maybe investigations that we've seen or litigation that we've seen, and obviously the cost to charge ratio and the charge increases, and then sort of this lag in time. So if you're not exercising your diligence, there could be other unintended consequences that are happening maybe on the business side. I think we talked about, right, that could be attributed to charge increases, and folks aren't necessarily considering those on the other side of things in terms of compliance and filing cost reports and understanding what's getting input into that formula, which is it is complex and there are a variety of factors that affect it, and they can be compounded over time. So yeah, that's a super helpful explanation, Peter, and I would love for folks to be able to actually see the really amazing chart that you've made for us previously because it's so helpful. And in a podcast, we can't necessarily do that, but I think the big take home in terms of outliers is and from a defense perspective specifically is are you getting paid more than the services that you're being provided? And it's hard to track it sometimes in the way that outlier payments are paid because of this really complex formula, what goes into it, and sort of this time lag. But at the end of the day, outliers are supposed to be just that, right? Outliers. And so you need to be paid from the government's perspective, commensurate with the services that are being provided.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, and probably listeners are all familiar with PEPPERS and different ways of assessing, whether any given provider is if their billing patterns are potentially aberrant through comparisons to other providers. But the outlier payments in their back in when they were originally created back in the 90s were actually calculated or determined on a length of stay basis. And so, the length of stay associated with an admission needed to exceed a certain number of days beyond two standard deviations of the mean associated with that DRG. So a bunch of kind of statistical mumbo jumbo. But point being, what it highlighted was, for a given admission or claim to trigger outlier status, it kind of going back to Malcolm Gladwell's, it truly had to be, very, very to the right-hand side of the curve, very far to the right-hand side of the curve on, resource utilization or length of stay for it to trigger that outlier status. And so, as people think about False Claims Act risk, compliance risk, those sorts of things, looking at their volume of outlier claims as well as the total dollar in outlier payments is something to consider as, you kind of handicap your risk. If you're not, if you're lucky enough not to have, issues from or those regulatory bodies come knocking, or if you are, starting to figure out, what led to that and what elements of that formula on a year-over-year basis, was it year-over-year charge increases? Was it year-over-year delays in the cost to charge ratio being updated? What got you to the situation where your outlier payments started to look elevated as, in comparison to other providers?
previously, we sort of talked about, what's in a lot, what's the alignment? It's like the perfect, the outlier payment formula is the perfect storm, essentially, of all of these factors coming together and aligning just perfectly, so that you get the number that you're supposed to have. And you've got to have controls in place. And, from a compliance perspective, accounting perspective, billing perspective, if you're vend, you could have consultants and vendors who are doing the billing for you, and maybe they're not doing the billing and necessarily up to snuff, and that's going to affect you as well. And we've certainly seen that on the false claims side too. So it's not just in-house, it's who do you have sort of on the third party side that could be affecting the factors that go into that formula.
Yeah, no, that's really true. And very often, a provider's charge master management is something that's going to be oriented towards managed care negotiations and, really factors that address other payers. And because Medicare pays on a DRG basis and, the level of charges outside of outlier payments and a few other niche reimbursement areas doesn't really impact reimbursement. Hospitals can get blindsided to some extent by outlier payments because, it's really not something that, operations is going to be focused on when they're setting the charges, because from an operational standpoint, they may be, and rightfully so, super oriented towards, those managed care or other payer negotiations.
Yeah, and it's not, I deal with a variety of different types of fraud and abuse issues on a regular basis. And it's not, this isn't like a run-of-the-mill medical necessity issue where you could just come in and say, okay, there was a particular surgeon who was, doing surgeries that maybe weren't necessary, and how do we kind of drill down on that? This is, again, multiple factors that go into this formula, and then compounded by lags in time, over time, years sometimes. And so it does really require a very close eye. But let's take a second, Peter, and talk about what were the cases, sort of that, precipitated the, or sort of show the government's enforcement priorities on this, kind of, I guess, I don't want to say the word back in the day, but maybe for some listeners, we can say back in the day. I think we're talking like early 2000s, where there was a number of really big ticket cases, related to outlier payments.
Yeah, it's there's it was a little bit back in the day, which ages me a little bit. I actually was working, at a time when I became pretty familiar with these. The probably the still the sort of the granddaddy of them all is back to the early 2000s and in 2006. I believe the settlement was in 2006 with Tenet Healthcare, which really initiated a lot of focus on outlier payments. And it was, it addressed multiple hospitals. And for folks listening, if you're not familiar with it, I highly recommend doing some Googling of it, because it's really interesting how, Tenet at the time and still is publicly traded, and how stock analysts used Medicare cost report and other data to figure out how revenues were increasing. And they traced that back to year-over-year increases in Medicare outlier payments, which, as that information came out, you can actually track the stock price, and you can see when things really changed. And with that becoming public, it obviously attracted some government scrutiny. And digging into some of the core issues, which then permeate through a number of other publicly, disclosed outlier payment issues involving, what are the appropriate increases that a hospital can affect on charges on a year-over-year basis? What does, you know, what do, or what does rather Medicare guidance refer to when it says costs or charges rather need to be reasonable relative to costs? And how do those, if a Medicare contractor is delayed in updating a cost to charge ratio, where's the liability fall? Those were some of the core, kind of issues that were addressed as part of that. And our set the table for a number of other investigations, settlements, and other activity related to outlier payments. Yeah, and that, from a from an industry standpoint, that tenant case really, also set a lot of ground rules going forward, because the outlier payments were part of the corporate integrity agreement. And coming out of that, there were some sort of guardrails, if you will, put around contractors in terms of forcing some reconciliations when cost to charge ratios change by, more than a certain percentage from year to year, or if outlier payments, in an absolute sense, on an absolute dollar basis, change more from one year to the other. So, that case then, then you can continue to Google. There's a Methodist case. There's all the way up until, the more recent time period, where there's some different variations of outlier payment issues. But it's really, you can learn a lot from kind of digging into and Googling and reading about that tenant case, getting, the CIA, or at least for, I believe it's still publicly available, reading through the CIA. There's a lot to learn in terms of, kind of where the Medicare formulas, how the Medicare formulas work, and where some of the vulnerabilities are in that formula by reading through, the specifics with the tenant matter.
And I'm not sure if you actually mentioned the settlement amount, Peter, for the tenant matter, but it was not small for our listeners. It was $900 million in 2006, specific to that particular settlement. I think $788 million of which dealt with the actual outlier payment issue. And I don't remember like how long of a time period did that span? I mean, they must have been getting like pretty significant outlier payments for a number of years.
It was, I'm going off a little bit on memory here, but it was a 5, 6 year period, and they had 40, 50 hospitals. And so, yeah, it adds up to, real money, even in 2024 dollars. So, yeah, it's something where, even in today's day and age, over the last few years, I mean, Medicare is making upwards of $5 billion in outlier payments every year. And just if you're listening at home and wondering, how many hospitals are receiving meaningful outlier dollars, it's actually quite a few. We've got, across the industry, probably upwards of 1,000 hospitals receiving more than $1 million in outlier payments every year. So, the kind of, as we discussed, the fact that, charge increases and, what's going on in the charge master can influence outlier payments, how, there's formulaic sort of nuances, and then how those kind of become relevant on a year-over-year basis, contributes to the fact that, an outlier payment issue can, A, become systemic because it impacts every claim, and then B, take a few years for a, diligent compliance group to figure it out, or a smart relator. And by that point, as illustrated in that tenant matter, it starts to add up to really significant dollars.
Yeah, and just to be totally clear, and I'm not sure if we were completely clear about this, but like I mean, these matters are generally proceeding under the False Claims Act, right? So you could have a whistleblower who comes in and identifies this issue, who could be, somebody internal, but also somebody external, a consultant or something like that. So certainly something to keep in mind. And again, under the False Claims Act, you can have treble damages and statutory penalties per claim. So when we're talking like a $900 million settlement and 788 of which was related to the outlier payments, that's a number that's likely some multiple of whatever amount was actually reimbursed on the outlier payments, and probably some statutory penalties thrown in there as well. And those, today in today's age are somewhere close to maxing out around 30K per claim. So like Peter just said, if it's systemic and you don't figure it out sooner than later, I mean, you could have many, many claims adding up over many, many years. And, under the False Claims Act, generally, I think the classic theory relates to reverse false claims. That is, are you getting these overpayments that you're not otherwise identifying and paying back in a timely fashion? And of course, there's a variety of different elements to the False Claims Act, including, materiality and falsity and scienter and causation. But at the end of the day, if you've got an overpayment that you're retaining and you're not exercising appropriate diligence to understand why those are being paid, that there could be a settlement there. There could be a case there could be a whistleblower.
Yeah, you're totally right. Yeah, I mean, and that's why, yeah, I forget what the saying is, a pound of diligence, or an inch of diligence is worth something in something later on. But in any event, knowing where your outlier payments are, looking at your PEPR, just doing those kind of compliance blocking and tackling activities can really, pay dividends in avoidance. But if you find yourself sort of dealing with an outlier payment issue, and I think, we'll probably talk about some of these more recent matters, but thinking about ways of fleshing out potential outliers, or problematic scenarios is really valuable, because the government's theories on these have evolved over time, and different charge increasing, and other payer, Medicaid pays some outlier payments, and so, it's resulted in, outlier payment issues continuing even up until, more recent time periods, sparking government activity.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute, because there was a particular matter I think that settled somewhere I think late 2022, the St. Vincent Hospital case, which I believe was owned by Tenet as well, and dealt with a number of outlier payment issues. But what was interesting in that case, I felt like, was that they had these sort of incremental cost or incremental changes to their charges over time. So in May of 2017, they had increased all charges in their hospital's charge master for inpatient services by 15%. And then in April 2018, they increased all charges for inpatient services by 18%. And then in October 2018, they did another 18%. And at some point, that amounted to receipt of outlier payments that, in the government's eyes, were not warranted. And so, how do we get there? And where is that threshold, Peter? And how can hospitals sort of figure out where that line is? What are I think one of the biggest questions here is, what is a reasonable charge increase? Is there a definition of that? And I think both of us are pretty well well aware that there isn't a specific threshold or a specific line in the sand. And hospitals have to operate too. Hospitals are also businesses, and I think even in specifically in today's age, we have a lot of hospitals that have tight, tight budgets and tight costs today. And so where do we see, increasing those charges when necessary versus ones that might meet thresholds or exceed thresholds to trigger those outlier payments that would otherwise, be unwarranted?
Yeah. And just also to note, so all of those, everything you listed was correct, though it is sourced to, for those following along at home too. You can Google that as well. It's all coming from the DOJ settlement agreement that's out on the web. So all those factors are publicly available. But yeah, Jackie, to your point, it's I think, on all of these outlier matters, especially those that hinge on, year over year charge increases that result in a cost to charge ratio being a, essentially an outdated cost to charge ratio being applied to claims that have, where the charges have increased substantially since that cost to charge ratio was set. It begs the question of, okay, well, what charge increase is acceptable, and what does Medicare mean when the regulatory and subregulatory guidance instructs providers that your charges should be, reasonably related to costs. Every provider's got a different cost structure. Costs are not evenly distributed across, services within a hospital. Some, big systems are going to be able to negotiate better costs in certain areas than not others, as opposed to, smaller single hospitals may, not have that type of negotiating power. So leaves a lot of subjectivity in, it leaves a lot of subjectivity in, how a system goes about even just setting their charges, not to mention, year over year increases to react to, what payers are doing, or how networks are changing, and the different types of dynamics. And so I think that's one of the big challenges in, addressing some of these outlier investigations, is that, a lot of times, and I don't know what the specifics were on the Tenet, but I think when hospitals, I am familiar with hospitals who are implementing those types of double-digit charge increases on a year-over-year basis. And oftentimes it's because, they're reacting to other payers, or they're reacting to market dynamics, or they want to, kind of goes back to the motto that no money, no mission, right? Yeah, they've got to make a margin, and they've got to be able to continue to employ people. So they're pulling the levers that they can pull. Oftentimes, I know we've hit on this point a few times, but often with the unintended consequence that outlier payments will go up. And so that's where, I do think, how you address those, especially once it gets to a False Claims Act investigation stage, is complicated, because you've really got to kind of reset what the thought process was leading up to, when those charge increases were implemented.
Yeah. What is, I think one thing I want to make sure we touch on is the issue related to kind of the reconciliation and how that's impacted outlier payments that have been paid. It's especially in recent years. I don't know, Peter, if you can kind of give us a little bit of understanding of what's happened in the last decade or so related to that, and then I can kind of comment on, what that looks like from a defense perspective.
Yeah, sure. I mean, especially coming out of the Tenet matter in the early 2000s, contractors were instructed to, so Noridian and the like were instructed to perform what's called outlier payment reconciliation when they process cost reports. And what that meant was, if a hospital submitted a cost report and the cost to charge ratio on that cost report changed by more than 10 percentage points from the prior cost to charge ratio or the prior cost report, then that was supposed to be a flag to the MAC to, take a closer look at that hospital, potentially adjudicate claims using a different cost to charge ratio in order to avoid that lag, right? Instead of applying a 0.5, 0.5 cost to charge ratio to a cost structure that's changed by 15%, or they would apply a more contemporaneous percentage. Well, what OIG, and this was a November 2019 report issued by OIG, what they found was that contractors were, slipping up. They weren't always performing that reconciliation and adjudicating claims according to the regulatory and sub-regulatory guidance. And as a result, over in OIG's view, overpaying outlier payments. And I think it's a good sort of reminder that, just like how Medicare and its contractors have other, clean claim requirements, and should be, bumping claims up against the common working file and that sort of thing. You can't, as a provider, necessarily rely on those sort of, systemic, what should be a safeguard on the claim adjudication side, to catch some of these things.
Yeah, and I think, well, yeah, surprise, surprise, the MACs aren't necessarily calculating or staying up to date on certain things, but not a total knock there. So I think from a False Claims Act perspective, that's really important because, there's arguments that can be made related to materiality, for example. So if you're a provider, you say, well, I've been audited numerous times and they're still paying the claims, or, we've CMS has known about this for 10 years, and they're still paying the claims. There is a line at which it becomes a question of whether you know, it really matters to the MAC or to CMS or whatever, that, you know, what you're doing, it really matters to actually the payment of the claim. But to lean on the MAC to say, well, it's their responsibility to reconcile this, and they would tell me if I wasn't really entitled to this outlier payment, is not necessarily going to move the needle as much as one might think from a False Claims Act perspective. I think, you know, it's still an overpayment. So how do we move out of the overpayment line? And we can say it's, you know, in many cases it's a mitigating factor if they didn't catch something over a number of years. And yeah, maybe if it was 10 years, it's not material at all. I don't know where that line is, but it certainly puts you sort of on the back of your heels at that point.
Yeah, that makes sense. So kind of in other words, yeah, kind of it's not as if, you know, it's as I forget what cases it were, but essentially, you know, it's not the same as saying, you know, Medicare processed the claim with everything, you know, with full knowledge. It's kind of buried deeper into the, you know, the guts of the adjudication process, and not something that'll necessarily alleviate any overpayment or repayment concerns for, I guess, for either the enforcement or the provider. Is that fair to say?
I think probably. I mean, as a defense attorney who's dealt with this issue before, I'll always make that argument, and I'll stand by that argument for my client in terms of materiality. But yeah, I mean, it's really hard, especially with you know, reports out there from OIG saying that the MACs aren't actually collecting on this or aren't actually, you know, reconciling in the way that they should be. And there's, I think, billions of dollars that they're not recovering necessarily. So, yeah, it's kind of a hard line to draw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Once you get over half a billion, it starts to get a little hard to ignore, I guess, huh?
It's a lot of government dollars, absolutely. So, and yeah, I mean, I think that sort of brings us to sort of, you know, the last points that we wanted to cover, right, Peter, which was sort of, you know, how do we deal with this, you know, from a defense perspective, from a focus on the from the government and fraud and investigation, fraud and abuse investigation, and what does that look like? You know, we've had the pleasure to work together previously, and I think both of us have dealt with this issue, of course. But you know, what are the areas of focus? What are kind of the what are the areas of focus, I guess, that we would need to help our clients or whoever we're dealing with or talking to think about and maybe not have to deal with this in the future.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think, you know, we've worked together on one of these, and in my other experiences. I mean, I think, especially at the onset, just getting all of the facts, right? And realizing that it touches a lot of different parts of the organization, right? It's not like a medical necessity review, right? Where you're just dealing with maybe, you know, an LCD here or, IRF admission requirements there. You know, you're talking charge master, you know, who was doing what with the charge master, then cost reporting. Okay. You know, which is more often than not, you know, not the same type of people who are going to be involved in the charge master. You know, and then, you know, claim processing. And so you've got, you know, sort of, you've got to start gathering, you know, facts and who knew what, and, you know, and just going back to the kind of the outlier payment formula, you know, what were the key inputs? How did they change over time? And it's not necessarily going to be, you know, one-stop shopping in terms of identifying, you know, the people who have that background and that information. So yeah, I'm curious what your thoughts are just kind of on the discovery standpoint. But I think, you know, just from a nuts and bolts perspective of figuring, you know, starting to figure out why, you know, the government might come knocking on your door. Those are I think the immediate things to start thinking about in terms of the immediate facts to start gathering in order to, you know, being able to answer questions.
Yeah, it's I think that the investigation itself is almost, as complicated, if not more complicated than the formula itself. And trying to sort of balance all of the different inputs, right? And when you have, there could be some sort of acquisition that occurred, or a change in vendors, or the COVID-19 pandemic, and how did that affect things? I mean, I think, that really threw a wrench into things in terms of cost reporting itself and delays there, right? So we're now in 2024 and the pandemic ended, my gosh, Peter, was it last year, last April? Or am I
I think
already
so.
over? Or was it 2022? I think I've just been in a time warp. But the pandemic is ended. And so cost reports, I think, are back on track in terms of regular, filing and everything by this point. But there was a delay back, I think, in 2020 and 2021, possibly into 2022. So that also can affect things and compound what might otherwise be a pretty simple a simple issue into something that is just a huge, huge web to untangle. And so really drilling down in, who are the key players, what were the types of services that were being rendered that charges were increased for, or were charges increased across the board? What were really were the reasonable charge increases? And how do we drill down on that? Who was involved? What did they know from a scienter perspective? And did the charge increases actually was there some kind of causation measure there? So lots of different types of things to think about if you are dealing with this in an investigation. If you receive a CID related to outlier payments, there's going to be a lot of materials to gather and sift through, and certainly an expert is extremely well suited to assist with that because it is so complex and the numbers are, they can really balloon very quickly. So it's something to really get your arms wrapped around and as soon as possible. But I think, in terms of, I guess we can kind of wrap up with sort of like some key takeaways, I guess, and maybe some compliance considerations that we haven't already discussed. But, what are the internal controls that you have today, right? Are you conducting audits? Who is doing the cost reporting? Who has control of the charge master? This differs in terms of whether you are one hospital or you are a multi-hospital system, or you are, a conglomerate that has many, many hospitals across many, many states. So having those internal controls is very important, regardless really of size and complexity. Are you benchmarking your charges sort of in comparison to other similarly situated hospitals? I think, we sort of touched on that earlier, right, Peter? Are you, in receiving your outlier payments, are you an outlier? Are you really an outlier in comparison to some of your peers? And I think the government will look at that, and they're leveraging the data internally, and that's very clear. And then, this is an easy one, but do you have competent folks? Do you have competent folks that you're confident are really completing those internal reports and billing and whatnot, either as a vendor or consultant or internally? Are you confident in their skills and that they're doing it accurately?
Yeah, I totally agree with all of that. And I think, on the compliance part too, you mentioned benchmarking and comparing to peers. I think I'd just add to that, looking at year over year changes and sort of going beyond Pepper, right? Looking at, are there specific DRGs? Are there specific types of claims where the hospital's getting increased outliers relative to their base or to their peers? That's something we talked about some of these more recent cases, but that's something that's popped up, right? Where it's a specific a handful of DRGs where the outlier payments are being triggered because of more targeted charge increases, or things like NICU Medicaid cases where state by state, they've got very different outlier payment formulas and application of across the board for charge increases or targeted charge increases can influence that. And so, thinking about and starting with the perspective of What are the government payments? What is the distribution of them, and where are they coming from? I think is, a good approach to proactively addressing the compliance concerns associated with outlier payments.
Yeah, it is surely a very complex issue, I think, right? And we both are very well aware of that, very well versed in it, I think, by this point. It's a really interesting issue. I don't think that it's going away. It's been around for quite some time. We've seen activity related to outlier payments as recently as the last couple of years. So it's something to be on the lookout for and be aware of, of course. So yeah, I don't know. This has been super fun, Peter. I love doing podcasts with Peter Dressel. So I'm glad that we could do this, and it's always a pleasure to hang with you.
Yeah, likewise, Jackie. I have never done a podcast, so hopefully there's some listeners out there who got here to the end with us and enjoyed it as much as anybody can enjoy a outlier payment conversation. So
I was channeling for anybody who will get this reference, Selena Gomez from Murders in the Building, which is like one of my favorite shows these days, and I think very star-studded cast as well. But yeah, I don't know. We'll see if podcasts are, the future for Peter and Jackie. But in the meantime, we'll stick to our day jobs, right?
That's right. For now, at least, yes. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, to all of our listeners, of course, if you have any questions related to outlier payments or the like, please don't hesitate to reach out. Always happy to answer questions related to whatever we discussed today or otherwise. So thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to AHLA Speaking of Health Law wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about AHLA and the educational resources available to the health law community, visit AmericanHealthLaw.org.